Hey everyone, welcome to 10 Movies, the podcast where we dig into the work of one actor through 10 of their films. I'm Hemel Javeri, and with me is co-host Brian Minter.
Hello, good evening, and hello to you, America.
On this season of 10 Movies, we are digging into the movies of the incredible Jennifer Lopez. If you're just joining us, so far we've taken a look at some of J-Lo's early work, like the biopic Selena and the true B-movie classic Anaconda. This week, we're going to tackle one of her more critically acclaimed hits, 1998's Out of Sight, adapted from a novel by Elmore Leonard, directed by Steven Soderbergh. So the movie boasts an all-star cast, including George Clooney, Jennifer Lopez, Ming Rhames, Don Cheadle, Steve Zahn, and
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton.
I love Michael Keaton. He's one of my all-time faves. You know who else I love for no real good reason? Ving Rhames. And he's in this too.
I love Ving Rhames.
Yeah, I love Ving Rhames. I got a soft spot for him.
Though I always associate him with Mission Impossible films.
Well, he's in them, so that might be
I don't know why that is, but I do.
He's someone we couldn't do a podcast season about because he's never a leading man. He's always a character actor.
He is, but he's always a likable character actor.
Yeah, he's got a lot of presence.
He does. But yeah, this time we're going to talk about Out of Sight, which I had not seen before.
So there's a lot of movies on this podcast list for the season that I have not seen and don't really want to see. Like, I'll be honest, no one listens to our podcast, but I enjoy getting to come hang out with you and having something we're going to talk about. So sometimes you can be like, well, this is a movie worth watching because I have to watch it. This one I was actually kind of excited to watch because I'd never seen it and it looked cool.
I was excited to watch it mainly because it meant getting Pyle off my back. Pyle is my sister. She constantly is one of the people.
She stands this movie.
She stands this movie. She has for the past 20 plus years been like, you have to see Out of Sight. You have to see Out of
Sight.
This
is a weird, like, I'm not going to knock it, but this is a weird movie to be on about for 20 years.
I think it's because, so one of the questions that I had about this film, actually, let me rewind for a second because I want to break down the structure of the show for a second. We're going to talk about the plot. We're going to talk about whether or not we liked it.
Oh, our show, our podcast.
Our
episode.
Podcasting
yes.
Episode.
Please do.
We are going to talk about, we're going to give you the most J-Lo moment of the show. And then we're going to get into the race, gender, wokeness segment. Everybody else's favorite part of the show. And then we'll have a movie MVP.
So, Emma, what happens in the film Out of Time?
It's called Out of Sight.
It's a very bland movie title. It's very hard to remember what it's called, but
yeah, it's so weird, and I can't tell you the plot. I can't really describe it because I'll be honest, I had a really hard time following the heist situation.
Yeah, it's a heist movie for sure.
It is a heist movie, except
you don't think it's a heist movie?
No,
I guess
no.
It's a caper. It's a crime caper.
It's a little mixed genre, right? It's a cops and robbers film with a heist movie in between, because she's trying to catch him.
Yeah, no, so you're going to have to try harder than this. You can't just start talking about who's doing what without giving our listeners who might have not seen the movie or might not have seen it in 20 years a little bit of a refresher.
Let me try to break this down succinctly, which is that Jennifer Lopez plays Karen Sisko, a federal marshal who is out to grab George Clooney, who is a few levels above petty thief.
He's a bank robber.
He's a bank robber, kind of a rakish, good-looking guy who's been robbing banks based on his good looks, from what I can tell in the film. He gets arrested, escapes, and Karen Sisko is after him. But during the middle of this escape, he gets involved in this heist to steal diamonds from some guy that he met in prison.
Yeah, there's a rich guy, a guy who went to prison for some sort of white-collar crime, who lets it slip that he is sitting on millions of dollars worth of diamonds in his palatial home somewhere in Detroit?
Detroit.
And yes, and then a ragtag band of various misfits and ne'er-do-wells hatches a number of plots to steal the diamonds. So you've got Clooney and Ving Rhames, who are like crew one. And you've got Don Cheadle and some other guys who are like crew two.
Yeah.
But eventually they become one crew. Their paths sort of cross.
Yeah, and the whole goal is to get some diamonds. But part of the problem with this film is that it doesn't really require a heist. It's really just a robbery. Because they don't really have to sneak anything out. They're just coming to rob a guy.
You're right. It's not a heist film because you don't have the heisting. But you did leave out, I would say, a core element, which is the sexy thrillerness, the Jennifer Lopez and George Clooney and their
Yes, I did leave
thing.
It out. Mainly because I might be the only person in the world who did not think this was a sexy film.
I didn't really buy them. Right? They're very attractive people.
Yes.
Legendarily so.
Yes.
But yeah, so I don't think the movie really, it just makes you, it just says they're super into each other, right? Like she goes to the prison, Clooney breaks out, and then for reasons that are not entirely believable, they both end up in the trunk of a car together, squished together. And instead of being like freaked out or trying to kick his ass, she's just like, hello, handsome bank robber covered in sewage mud.
So
you're feeling my boob.
Let's talk about the sexiness, because this was billed to me as a sexy thriller.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm waiting for it to get sexy, except the first scene that 20 plus years ago was supposed to read as like cool, flirtatious, now is just assault. Like, he just is feeling her up in the trunk of a car after they kidnap her.
It's very unsexy.
There's nothing sexy about this. This is just borderline assault.
Even George Clooney, who I would argue is... You could not find anyone better to just be charming for no good reason.
Yes.
And even he, like, I don't quite buy him as, like, why is she totally into this situation?
Right. They're supposed to have some kind of banter about old films or something like that. And I guess a long time ago, that's what read as sexy to people.
And he's dirty. He just climbed out, like, through the septic system or something. And, yeah, he's got a gun.
And he's shoved her in the trunk of a car.
So he's abducted her.
This is the second time in movies that we have talked about for this podcast, the other one being 12 Monkeys during our pandemic mini season, where, like, somebody gets shoved in the trunk of a car, a woman, and she doesn't immediately, like, she ends up falling in love with the person who put her in the trunk of a car. Like, that trope is so horrible and so played out, and I don't think you would see it today because it's so unrealistic.
So what the movie wants us to believe is that George Clooney is the handsome bank robber, mm-hmm. and Jennifer Lopez is the driven federal law enforcement agent, and even though they're on opposite sides of the law, they're drawn to each other, and like they have this like repartee and this back and forth and this tension, and the plot is all about that. But I'm like, I never really quite bought it.
And I think that is the age of the film. I think that it just aged poorly, because nothing about it screams that they're super hot for each other, aside from the fact that they're both really good looking.
But that's not enough, yeah.
Perhaps they like guns. I don't know.
So it sounds like you did not enjoy Out of Mind.
Out of Time?
Out of Time.
Out of Sight?
Out of Sight. See, it's a forgettable title.
I actually didn't really like it that much. I warmed up to it towards the end when I actually figured out. I was like, oh, it's Elmore Leonard, of course. And then when I rewatched it in my head, like in retrospect, it makes a lot more sense. But it makes a lot of sense to me as an Elmore Leonard film. It did not make any sense to me as a sexy thriller.
Yeah, I didn't like, it's got like a really, it's well reviewed. It's got like a 92% of Rotten Tomatoes. People like it. It's Steven Soderbergh. It's George Clooney. It's Jennifer Lopez. So I was prepared to really enjoy it.
Same.
And it's fine.
Yeah.
As something you said earlier, I think is like it's. I think it's really dated, not in terms of like costumes or things, but just in terms of like storytelling and filmmaking, right?
Yes.
Like Soderbergh would go on to like, if you've watched the Ocean's 11 movies, the first of which is great, and Logan's Lucky, his more recent, like he's developed this kind of like thriller, caper, heist movie to like tonally perfect, and this is clearly his first attempt at it,
mm-hmm.
and it's totally all over the map, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes it's a breezy romp, but sometimes it's like a dark Coen Brothers style,
yes,
like brutality and poor impulse control, and then sometimes it's just like a straight up by the numbers thriller, right? Like it's a Coen Brothers movie, but then it's a heist movie, and then sometimes it's like Mystic River, right? Like all these scenes with Jennifer Lopez when Clooney's not there are really like played straight. Like there's all these scenes where she's with her dad and they're like, he's trying to help her figure out the case. And there's nothing like funny or dark or noir about any of that. It's just like a straightforward movie. But then the very next scene will be some, you know, wacky madcap thing.
Right. There's a lot of tonal shifts that are weird, and the pacing is totally off in this film. Sometimes it's very slow. Sometimes it's really fast. The script also needs a little bit of work. Like there are plot holes that kind of get dropped. I hate to say this about my buddy Steve Zahn, but he doesn't work at all in the film. Like he's tried kind of shoehorned in as this He's like a ex-con that you kind of feel bad for, but he makes terrible life decisions, so he doesn't really belong in the film at all.
Well, we love Steve Zahn on this podcast. Yeah, even when he isn't given a joke to say, he's incredibly funny. But yeah, you're right. Like, really all the supporting characters, Steve Zahn and the Michael Keaton character and Don Cheadle, like all these actors we've seen in movies, and they are capable, like especially Don Cheadle and Michael Keaton. They can do serious, they can do madcap, they can do comedy, they can do all these different tones. But in this movie, like, because the film itself keeps shifting, like Don Cheadle's character seems completely out of place in every scene, because he's like, he's totally playing it straight. He's like this like menacing mean gangster guy, but then there's this like his henchman like killed himself by shooting himself in the head, and they don't go together at all, but they're smooshed together.
No, and like you said, it works out really well for him in Ocean's 11, where he figures out how to put all these pieces together. But Out of Sight is really just the drop in the bucket, and it's probably the first time, and it is basically our introduction to Steven Soderbergh. So, yes, 20 years ago, this was a great film. I don't think it holds up very well.
Yeah, it seems like a dry run for his Ocean's 11 movie. Even, like, it's got Clooney in it, it's got Don Cheadle in it, and, like, it's even, like, his music. Like, he's leaning on these kind of, like, you know, sort of funky 70s tunes. But yeah, but all of it is, in Ocean's 11, the tone is so consistent. And here, you've got, like, kind of a funny scene, but in the next scene, like, at one point, like, they kill a man, and, like, it's not graphic, but it's a brutal scene.
Yeah.
And, like, that wouldn't happen in an Ocean's 11, because it would be all wrong. But here, yeah, you just, as you settle into one kind of tone, you're getting a completely different thing. And
so can we lay the sexiness trope at Soderbergh's feet, or is that Elmore Leonard? Like, I never read the book that it's based on, but I watched Justified, which is great. It's also Elmore Leonard. And there's none of that in Justified.
I think it's all the director, right? Like, if the movie isn't working for some reason, it doesn't matter what, even if whether the book was terrible or great, once it's in the director's hands, it's their movie.
Right. It's supposed to be, I'm not sure what noir capers were like in the 40s, but it kind of has that old-fashioned vibe sometimes. Like you said, it's a whole bunch of different genres kind of roped into one, but the sexiness of it just didn't work for me.
Yeah, it's not sexy.
No.
And they don't have really good chemistry. Like, she's upending her whole life and her sense of self for this guy, and he is in, like, jeopardizing, like, what he does for a living and his big score. So you have to really believe that, like, oh, they have this connection. They're willing to throw it all away for something. And I didn't really buy that at any point.
Well, the what they're throwing it away for, like, it's just physical. They don't know anything about each other except for, like, yeah, she's super hot, and yes, he's very handsome.
Yeah, they grew up in a car.
Are we ready?
I will say, so my lovely wife, Wendy, who watches these films with me.
Yes, who suffers greatly
who
for
suffers
the podcast.
At this point, I have to trick her, right? Because, like, she doesn't like to watch movies anyway, so I don't even say we're watching. I just start it. And then she'll be like, wait, are we watching a movie? And then if it seems like a weird choice, 15 minutes in, she'll say, is this for your podcast? But Wendy is not, she never comments on the physical attractiveness of, I've never once heard her talk about an actor or anybody. She's just, that's not where her mind goes. But in the middle of this movie, Clooney's on screen and she goes, he's just so handsome.
He is so
he
handsome.
He is, I agree. It just...
But, he's so handsome, but we're so used to seeing him be handsome guy that he's not doing anything new in this film. Like,
yeah, and he's capable of such, like, charm and twinkle. Yeah. And I think he's very watchable, and this character of his is charming. But yeah, it's so, like, yeah, like we just said, none of it seems to fit together for
me. It's a little flat. Are we ready to talk about the cast?
Yes, hell of a cast.
Hell of a cast. I will, as always, we're going to save Jennifer Lopez towards the end of the film so that we can talk more about her. But I think we talked about George Clooney.
Talked about Clooney. Love Clooney.
Talked about Clooney. Should we talk about Ving Rhames as Buddy Bragg?
Yeah. So Ving Rhames is the helper of, he breaks George Clooney out of jail. Mm-hmm. They tried to give him, he's actually the only, of all the supporting characters, he's the only one I feel like his tone always matches the scene, right? With, like, Steve Zahn, Michael Keaton, Don Cheadle. I feel like directorially they're all over, like, they were told to do the wrong thing in a scene. Ving Rhames doesn't. He always seems to fit the scene. But they tried to give his character some sort of, again, this probably comes from the book. He's, like, constantly confessing his sins to his sister, who's a Jesus lady.
Yeah, like, all that stuff is Elmore Leonard. Like, there's so much Elmore Leonard in this film.
Well, it doesn't land. It's not funny.
Yeah, and when you read it in a book, I'm sure that it makes a lot of sense. Like, it gives it that thing. But when a character is telling you constantly that I am confessing my sins to my sister, that's just bad filmmaking.
Yes.
Because you're not seeing
it. Yeah, you don't meet the sister.
You don't
there's
meet
no
the,
scene with
there's
them.
There's no
yeah.
point to
Cut
it.
It out,
all of that is Elmore Leonard. My personal take is that unless you're actually making Justified, Elmore Leonard books don't make good movies.
I don't think I've ever read an Elmore Leonard book, but I feel like I've seen 30 movies that are based on Elmore Leonard books.
All right, so then there is Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle. Kind of wasted in this
wasted.
Movie. Wasted. Because, like, in the Ocean's 11 movies, in Avengers, Don Cheadle can do funny.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, you know, he should be in, like, a Guy Ritchie movie, right? This kind of, like,
yep.
He's the villain. He needs to be, like, over the top and kind of a little bit deranged. But he's, and again, I think this is directorial problems. He plays the guy really serious and, like, menacing and, like, you're kind of afraid of him. But funny stuff is happening all around him, so he's never funny. He's just wrong.
There's one scene in the film where Albert Brooks plays...
Oh, right, he's the rich guy.
Plays the rich guy. I think his name is Ripley. And he's in prison, and Albert Brooks has asked Don Cheadle to give him a goldfish. And he's like, hey, I will pay you handsomely for this goldfish. There is a bit of a back and forth between George Clooney and Don Cheadle, and at the end of that scene, Don Cheadle takes the goldfish out of the bag and crushes it in his bare hand. And that scene is so weird because it could be comedic, or it could just be sociopathic,
you're totally right.
And you're not really sure what it's supposed to
for
do.
What the movie should... He should have played that scene for laughs.
Yes.
And then there's an earlier scene where Don Cheadle shivs a man to death. Like, and it's, again, it's kind of painful and graphic. That doesn't belong in a comedy.
No.
And this movie is a comedy some of the time.
Yes. So there's that. Should we talk about Michael Keaton?
Again, miscast, right? Like, he comes in this, like, very serious scene with her dad, and he's, walking right out of a Coen Brothers movie. He's over the top, and he's a little bit ridiculous, and, like, the scene completely shifts energy when he comes in, because it's like he walked off of the set of a totally different movie.
Well, I think that might make more sense when you think about the fact that he's reprising a role that he played, I think, in Get Shorty. That John Travolta film that was also based...
Jackie Brown. Yes, that's a character from Jackie Brown.
Okay.
Is that also an Elmore Leonard novel?
I have no idea. It might be.
Well,
we're very
well
researched on this podcast.
FBI agent boyfriend of J-Lo.
Uncredited.
But again, like, you don't know why he's her boyfriend. He seems like a real asshole.
Yeah, she... Okay, we're going to save this until the Jennifer Lopez segment, but she can do better than Michael Keaton.
Now, there's no other ladies in the film, right? Am I remembering? I watched this movie over a week ago.
There's one...
Any other women characters?
No lead female characters. She has one interaction with Viola Davis.
Oh, right, yes!
Plays,
Viola Davis, this very minor role.
Yeah, she plays a minor role. She plays this sister of a suspect that they're kind of looking for, like one of these guys that's going to rob the house in Detroit, and Jennifer Lopez and Viola Davis have this great scene together.
I wonder if this was Viola Davis's first role.
I don't think so. I think she's done stuff. There's also, I think, Catherine Keener is in this film as well.
Yes, Catherine Keener plays Clooney's sister, I think.
Yeah, she's in at the very beginning, and she and Jennifer Lopez also have one scene together.
What an embarrassment of riches, like, in terms of, like, the acting firepower in this movie.
Yeah.
Most of them not used particularly well.
No, and I think everybody was like, oh, let's be in this cool heist gangster fun film together, and 20 years later, not great. But when it came out, everybody loved it.
Well, we hadn't seen, Ocean's 11 and Burn After Reading and all the things that would come after.
So let's talk about Jennifer Lopez.
Definitely the star of the movie, right? Like, I don't even think it's a Clooney-Lopez movie. I think it's a Lopez movie.
That I agree with that. I think that even if Clooney is billed as the star of it, it's definitely a Jennifer Lopez movie. So we have a couple of things that we talk about when we talk about Jennifer Lopez. We talk about her toughness, sex appeal, the sass that she brings to roles, her competency. We talk about her working class status that she usually plays with her characters. And I think a new thing that we're going to throw in here is how is Jennifer Lopez ethnically coded in this film? Because I think that's one of the more interesting ways directors use Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, and I think I think she's playing a very, like, tough, competent, no-nonsense. Like, it's kind of easy to, like, make her a cop, you know? It's almost kind of a... It's very easy for her to be tough because she's a federal marshal and she's
kind of
supposed
a cheat.
To be tough.
So one of the interesting things about this is doing the vague amount of research that I did before we started recording is that they had originally thought about having Sandra Bullock play the Jennifer Lopez character.
How would you feel about Sandy B in this role?
I mean, I think I would love her because I love her so much, but I don't think she'd be great in this role.
But probably not, like, you know, when we talk about, like, an actor, whether we did our Keanu season, we did our Matthew McConaughey season, one of the things we ask is, like, if you took the actor out of the movie, would it change it for the worse? And this one, I don't think it would. Like, you could see Sandra Bullock in that role, and it's basically the same movie, which makes me think that, like, this is not really a Jennifer... It's not important that it's Jennifer Lopez. She's just doing her job as an actress.
Yeah, I think it's important that it's Jennifer Lopez for a lot of, like, external reasons, because she's not white. So I think it's important for that factor. But, like, within the film universe, I don't think it's important that it's Jennifer Lopez.
Now, do you feel like the movie knows or cares that she's not white?
Yeah, I think the movie doesn't care.
Her dad is white, which you have to bump on that a little bit.
Her dad is Richard Farina?
Yeah, the guy from Law & Order. One of the detectives.
So we're definitely skipping ahead to how, like, she's ethnically coded in this film, which I think is important. And her ethnic identity doesn't really matter. It's totally neutralized here. And you'll find with other Jennifer Lopez films, it's an issue, right? But a lot of times people just try to make her white. Like, they just want her to read as white because they don't want to deal with any of the ambiguities that come with, like, casting a Latina actress and what that would mean.
Like, with Anaconda, like, Selena, it was very odd. The movie was written about her ethnicity in some ways, or her identity at any rate. And Anaconda, it was the same thing, where it didn't matter, you know, what her identity was. Is that because the movie doesn't want to deal with it, or because the script was written with, you know, sort of a blank slate and they cast a Latina actress?
Well, I think it's that Karen Sisko is white.
Oh, the character that it's based on. I see.
So it's not that...
it's not a very Hispanic name, is it? Karen Sisko.
Yeah, Karen Sisko, I think it's more that people want points for diversity without having to deal with any of the issues that come with, like, having a diverse character. So they just have erased all parts of her that would be Latina.
We want a brown lady, but don't have her do any brown lady stuff.
Yeah, like we talked about with Wedding Planner, right? They just made her be Italian. They could have easily just made her be Puerto Rican and had a Puerto Rican family, but for whatever reason, they just made her Italian for no
previous
discernible
podcast
reason.
Season, we discussed the movies of Matthew McConaughey, including the absolutely unwatchably terrible Wedding Planner, which is a Jennifer Lopez romantic comedy. Yeah. I feel like we should get bonus points this season for that one.
I think so. It's coming in really handy. We did, like, extra research. But I think in this role, she has all the stuff, you know, that makes a good Jennifer Lopez character, even though the movie would be kind of the same without it. She's tough. She's got sex appeal. Like, it rides on her sex appeal. Sass. There's a lot of Karen Sisko sass in this film.
Yeah, I buy this character. I believe the character when I'm watching her do stuff. It's not her fault. The movie doesn't really make sense.
Competency. She's super competent in everything she does. There's nothing about her that reads weak.
She does a lot of, like, kind of reckless things, but I think that's just the feature of the plot. Like, the plot requires her to, like, run into dangerous situations with no backup and let the bank robber go so she can catch him later and, you know, hug him and kiss him and that kind of stuff. So
yes, she definitely takes ownership of all her mistakes. She's doing them very deliberately. Like, she's not doing them because she's incompetent. She might be making some bad choices.
She's doing them because she wants to hug the bank robber.
Yeah, well, I was going to say she wants to bone the bank robber, but that's fine.
I was keeping it G-rated.
This is a family podcast. Kissing and hugging. Yeah, it is the kind of role that I think she does really well, regardless of whether or not you buy her sexual chemistry with George Clooney. Everything she does in this film is very believable.
Yeah, I want aside a hot, tough, sassy broad.
Aside from falling in love with George Clooney, everything is believable.
But
she's a great federal marshal.
In a more realistic film, yeah, like... She keeps doing, like, dumb things in order to advance this quasi-relationship with George Clooney, the bank robber. In a more realistic film, I would bump on that constantly.
Of course.
Yeah, but in this, it's such a mishmash that you're like, oh, well, that's what's happening now.
Did you think she was good in the movie?
Yes. Yeah, like, I thought everyone in the movie was good. I think it's directorially incoherent. So there's stuff about, like, what she's doing from scene to scene that doesn't make sense, but, like... Within each scene, yeah, she's totally believable. I don't bump on her performance at all.
All right, so the most J-Lo moment of the film.
What was the most J-Lo moment of the film?
These were so easy to do with Keanu and with Matthew McConaughey, and it's kind of hard to find a J-Lo moment. I have one.
All right, give me. So I watched this like 2 weeks ago.
Can I go first?
Yes, you should go first.
Okay, let me go first.
Also, you have to cut out all that dead air, by the way.
Yeah, I only will cut out the dead air. For me, the J-Lo moment is usually something where she balances a couple of her those characteristics that she's known for and kind of switches between the two of them. So generally, it's like either she's smart and competent and then she switches to being tough, or she's funny and she's sassy, but then she's immediately vulnerable in the next moment. This is her scene with... it's a scene that starts with her and Viola Davis, and then the evil... would-be robber kind of tries to assault her, and she's playing it kind of very meek and not so much being the victim, but
kind of setting him up.
Yeah, she's kind of setting him up. She's standing there and taking all the abuse that he's throwing at her, and at the very end, she like pulls the stick out of her bag and just like slams him. And it's such a great moment because the guy really had it coming. But she's very believable in it, right? Like, she's very believable as somebody that
it's very satisfying that she walloped him right there.
Yeah, and you're kind of like, oh, man, how is she going to get out of this? Like, you do see her vulnerability in that moment, and then you see her just, like, turn around and be, like super tough at the end.
Although, like, that again, that whole scene is, it's tonally off, right? Like, the scene starts
so
out, like, kind
off.
Of thrillery,
so
but then he's,
off.
Like, he's genuinely really scary. Like,
yes.
Oh, he's going to attack her.
Yeah.
But she's just, like, kind of welcoming it because she knows she can take care of herself. But, yeah, again, in a more serious movie, which the bad guy is in, she would de-escalate and get out of there.
Yeah, and I think you're just bringing up a great point, is that every scene, I had no idea where it started and where it was going to end. And maybe some people like that in film, but I found it really off-putting.
Yeah, I think that's what makes it unsatisfying. You can't get it, like, you can't figure out where the movie's going, and so it's not, there's no payoff. It's always like, oh, now what's going to happen?
Yeah,
like, there's a scene in the end where, like, a guy falls. He's a bad guy. We've seen him in a bunch of scenes. He falls and accidentally shoots his own head off. And it's a funny moment, but it's a very, like, dark comedy moment in an otherwise non-comic scene.
Right, and there are not a lot of darkly comic moments in that film, so it makes no sense to have that.
I can't actually think of a good J-Lo-y moment. I guess I kind of liked the scenes with her and her dad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like, and maybe this is because we just watched Selena last week, but like her playing the daughter of this guy, and you get the sense that, like, oh, he's like a cop or a private investigator, and like he's not overbearing, but she's kind of bouncing, bouncing work stuff off of him. Yeah, again, like, I think that's a whole different movie, but like I might have liked that movie if they kind of stuck with that tone.
I would watch a show about a dad and a daughter who were federal marshals. I think that would be a good show.
Yeah, she's a hard-charging federal marshal. He's a, like, cutting corners private eye. Yeah, like, give us that movie.
So I think that's good. We talked a little bit about the race, gender, wokeness. The wokeness factor, as we like to call it.
Do you feel like the film is woke? It's 20 years old.
So I have a lot to say about this, as I have a lot to say about these issues in general, but the movie for a really long time lost me on, I wish there was better shorthand than wokeness factor, but in terms of kind of its feminist appeal in how it treats women, for a long time it did really lose me, because I agree with you, being kidnapped and stuck into a trunk of a car is not sexy. It's not a great way to meet women. No one at home try it. Like, it's not going to work out for you. And I hate, like, I immediately will lose touch with a film if that's the, like, agenda that the director is pushing.
Yeah, the movie expects us to believe that A, Jennifer Lopez was kind of into that, and B, Clooney's character thought, like, well, we've bonded now, I kidnapped her.
Right, and so it kind of lost me on that, but the movie does a couple of things really well with Karen Sisko that won me over towards the end, which is, first thing, she has a lot of agency, right? Like, she has her own storyline here. It's not totally driven by George Clooney. And that comes through in the end, right? In the end, she could just let him go, but she doesn't. She shoots him in the leg, and she sends him off to prison. So she has her own agency.
Yeah, she's definitely the protagonist of the movie in a way that Clooney is not.
And she does not kind of get run roughshod by the men in her life. She always has equal standing with them. And even when she has this, like, horrible, federal marshal kind of come in and try to put holes in her story about how could she end up being stuck in the trunk of a car. She deals with that very effectively.
Or he's like the desk guy, and she's like, you don't know what it's like to be in the field.
Yeah.
Although he's right. She did let the bank robber go.
But like, one scene that I really liked is the scene at the bar where Jennifer Lopez is just hanging out by herself and she just wants to get a quiet drink in Detroit. And a line of men kind of come up to her.
Oh, yeah, the douchey sales guys come
and,
over.
Yeah, and try to, like, hit on her one by one. And Soderbergh lets all of this play out and kind of, like, it's not a long, continuous take, but he makes us sit through the agony of a woman being hit on who obviously does not want to be hit on. And I was like, okay, I will give you points for that because every woman who watches this movie has had this experience at a bar.
And her response is, like, you could see, like, this over-the-top, like, girl power kind of thing that wouldn't read true. But, yeah, she just, like, endures each of these, like, dumb guys. And
but she endures them, but she's very direct
and she rejects them very clearly.
She very clearly is like, I just, and you know, and it's escalating levels, right? She is escalating levels of, I just want to have a drink by myself. Thank you. Please leave me alone. And then the second guy comes to her, and she's like, this is boring as S-H-I-T. Please leave me alone, right? Like, there's nothing, there's no misconstruing what she's saying. And then George Clooney comes in and she's like, okay, this works.
Let's get out of here.
And what I appreciate about this entire scene is, like, it's not that women don't want to be hit on at bars. It's that women don't want to be hit on at bars by lame dudes. If you are George Clooney, please maybe come over and talk to me. But please bring something to the table.
Have you ever been successfully hit on in a bar? You have been hit on in a bar.
I have been hit on in a bar. I have not.
Never Clooney, though.
Not from Clooney. Not successfully. If I've successfully, meaning that I have done the hitting on.
Oh,
but
sure.
Not successfully.
No one's ever come up to you and done a good job.
Not enough that, like, I've enjoyed, like, having a drink with them, but not enough that, like, I'm like, here's a second date.
I hit on someone. I have not done a lot of hitting on women in bars. I did once at the Red Room at the Black Cat many years ago. And I remember going back, and I was with some of my fellas, some of my boys. And we went back to this house where a bunch of us lived. And everyone's like, Ryan. You know, I was getting all these props. We're like going over to her and, you know, talking to her, buying a drink or whatever. But then our friend Mary, she had not been there, but she was there hanging out at the house later. And she's like, oh, what happened? And we told her the story. And there was lots of, like, props being given to me. And Mary's like, no, she's never going to call you. Like, she, something about the way I told the story made her know immediately that woman had just been putting up with me and nothing was ever going to happen, which turned out to be exactly the case.
Women know. Like, we know to be polite because we don't want to get hurt. Like, we don't want to ruin our night by having the guy turn out to actually be a jerk and not take it very well that he's being rejected. But sometimes it's just the easiest way to get rid of somebody.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about the scene where she got hit on.
So you feel that though the movie predates our current era of wokeness, we're subtracting points for the whole abduction is sexy plot driver storyline, but we're willing to give some points for the respect with which the movie treats its woman main character.
Yeah, and there's, you know, the scene again where she is getting, where she is in Viola Davis's house and is about to get assaulted in a very violent, rapey way.
Yes, that there's a real rapey vibe in that scene, which, again,
totally,
very tonally off from the rest of the movie.
And really not a thing that anyone should kind of take lightly, but the also purpose of that scene that kind of came through to me, like, versus just being exploitation and fear, was these are the dangers that women constantly face. Like, this is just a constant reality, especially if you are a federal marshal, right? Like, and you're going into all these dangerous situations. So that raised that, actually, I don't want to say it won me over, but you're right, it added some points.
Yeah, she's around, like, dangerous macho dudes, both her colleagues in law enforcement and the, you know, the wrongdoers that she's attempting to bring to justice.
Yeah, so I think she's a great character, even if the execution doesn't work very well.
I would watch a newer, better movie about this character, for sure.
I would, yes. I would like to see another Karen Sisko film. I think it would be really good. And then we also talked about how she reads, right? How she's ethnically coded. She's just...
The movie doesn't care.
No, she's more than anything, she's just a federal marshal.
There is a certain, like, almost, like, deliberate colorblindness here. Like, one of the... Like, so the two bank robbers, the good guy bank robbers, Ving Rhames and George Clooney, white guy and black guy, they're buddies. And you, like, that doesn't... You don't bump on that at all, right? Like, they have a history together. But then there's this... So Don Cheadle puts together, like, this gang, and it's like... some black dudes who are kind of mean, and then there's a white dude who's kind of mean, and then there's like a dumb Steve Zahn white dude. But in reality, I kind of feel like you don't get a lot of multi-ethnic gangs. So the fact that they, but you know, like, you don't have a real reason for like, oh, they have to all work together because of XYZ. It's just like, oh, his gang is some white dudes and some black dudes.
Yeah.
I feel like there probably aren't many actual gangs in Detroit that are made of white dudes and black dudes working together.
Yeah, and this was when I think the prevailing thought was that you could pass off a film as being kind of woke by just saying we don't see color.
Yeah, it's colorblind casting.
It's colorblind casting. The only thing is that one white guy is called White Boy Bobby. So
the big mean guy.
Yeah, the big mean guy.
Yes.
So there's that. We've progressed. Let's just put it that way. I'm happy that we've progressed to not finding it sexy to put women in trunks of cars.
Aside from Jennifer Lopez, the heroine of the film, who did you feel was the most valuable player in the movie?
This is a tough one. I'm not sure I have a great answer for this. Who did you think was the movie MVP?
You know, we talked about there's tons of great supporting actors used poorly. I'm going to give it, though, to our boy Steve Zahn, who we have loved as a sidekick in a number of other movies. I do agree with you that I don't think his character is well written or directed, but he's just so funny, right? Like, every word out
Steve
of his
Zahn.
Mouth. Yeah, he's so, like, hapless. But he's not, like, the character is completely hapless. He's out of his depth all the time. But instead of being played, like, you could play that as clueless, but the guy's frustrated because he kind of knows he's out of his depth, and he's pissed off about all the things that are happening to him, but he's also a little bit terrified. Like, there's a lot happening with that character, and again, from scene to scene, his role in the movie doesn't make a lot of sense, but he's a funny dude, man, and he brings that guy to life.
If you are somebody who has seen Justified, he's basically Dewey Crow. Elmore Leonard has this Dewey Crow character
whatever
in Justified.
Whatever movie we talk about, you have to relate to some show I haven't seen.
They're all on FX,
if you're
okay?
Not talking about Sons of Anarchy, you're talking about Justified.
He's the Dewey Crow character. I'm sorry, don't know what else to say, but that's the archetype of that Elmore Leonard character, which is the hapless guy who's out of his depth and you're kind of rooting for, but who has also done some bad stuff.
We should do a free ad spot for prestige dramas on FX and just, you know, see if they'll bite.
See if he's done them. Movie MVP. God, I'm at such a loss, but
we got
it'll
Clooney,
have to go to
we
Ving
got Keaton,
Rhames.
We got Brooks.
It'll go to Ving Rhames. Yeah, because I genuinely enjoyed him every time he was on screen because I knew what I was going to get when he opened his mouth.
Yeah, he's good at conveying personality. And he's like I said earlier, he seems to fit in all his scenes. He's very even, and you don't like he's not going to do something that seems to break the tone or the mood of the character or the scene.
Right.
Has Ving Rhames ever been, like, a leading man in anything? I can't... Oh, Rosewood! Have you ever seen Rosewood?
I haven't.
It's kind of a, like, yeah, like, slavery-era action movie where he's riding around and shooting, like, two flintlock pistols.
Oh. I haven't seen it, but you watch all 38 hours of Justified, and I'll watch Rosewood.
Fair. Perfectly fair.
Is all
Justified
right.
The one with the, like, kind of, like, blandly handsome guy from the Wild West movie?
Stop. Blandly handsome? Did you just hold on. You just called Timothy Oliphant?
Oh, yeah, him.
You just called Timothy Oliphant blandly handsome?
Yeah.
No, he is exceedingly handsome.
He's a good-looking fella. He's not. He's no Clooney, you know?
He's exceedingly handsome.
He's generically handsome.
What? No.
He's not distinctive.
I hope this gets you run off the internet.
Don Cheadle's a great example, right? Like, Don Cheadle maybe isn't the handsomest guy in the world, but he's a very distinctive-looking person.
Oh,
Timothy Oliphant is just like, oh, right, he's that guy.
No, he's not that guy. He's Timothy Oliphant. All right, we're going to move on. Next week, Brian, what are we talking about next week?
I don't know. I totally forgot. Oh, we're talking about the movie that I think has, it's about her and her mother-in-law. But it's not actually about that, right? Like, I keep confusing it with one with her and her evil mother-in-law.
It's not the one about her and her mother-in-law. We are talking about Made in Manhattan next
Made in
week,
Manhattan.
Starring Jennifer Lopez and, weirdly, Ralph Fiennes.
Just the title and, like, my mental image of the, like, VHS tape cover make me not want to watch this movie. I'll tell you that right now.
Stay tuned next week for what I'm sure is going to be Brian ranting and raving and interrupting me every chance he gets.
So we hired, loyal listeners, a little peek behind the curtain here. As you may recall, this season of the podcast, we were recording in Hemel's patio out back. So the audio quality is not perhaps what we might hope, or perhaps what you might hope. But because we care so deeply about your listening experience, we have hired the services of an audio engineer. But because this podcast makes no money, we outsourced it to the lowest common denominator, who is a fella based in Nigeria, I believe.
Yes, and he did a good job.
He did. Well, yeah. Well, you know, see what you think of last week's episode. Did he do a good job or not? But he did send along what I cannot help but say was an extremely rude comment.
I think it was appropriate to...
He told Hemel via email, I think, to have that guy stop interrupting you all the time.
He said your co-host would be better off if he waited for you to stop. If he waited for you to stop speaking,
I think he was speaking purely as an audio engineer, just not wanting the bleed. I don't think he was remarking about my enthusiasm for talking over you.
All right, so next week we are going to be talking about Made in Manhattan, the rom-com that I liked. I love. Brian will remain to be seen.
It.
I've seen it.
Well, loyal listeners, I want you to watch the film this week so you can enjoy our commentary along with us.
All right. Thank you, as always, for joining us. And remember to rate and review us on iTunes or whatever podcast app that you use to listen to us. Follow us on Twitter at 10 Movies. Follow Brian on Twitter at Brian_Minter. And me at Hem Javeri.
And we'll get in fights with TV hosts these days. You don't want to miss it. And again, please rate and reviews because our algorithmic sorting overlords need reviews of our podcast in order to bring us to the attention of more and more Americans.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you next week.